Welcome to your Supercoach Coach podcast preseason episode number 6. I'm joined this week by Mark.
G'day everyone.
Faz unfortunately couldn't make it this week, so it'll just be the two of us on the show. As forecasted last week, we are going to kick ahead into the forward line. We're going to do premiums and mid-prices this week. It's one of the most talked about lines so far this preseason. A lot of premium options to look at, and quite recently, a lot of mid-price options that have popped up as well.
But a lack of rookies, it seems.
Yes, it does seem that way. So we're planning to fill probably 6 or 7 spots with premiums and mid-prices. So it seems a particularly relevant show. So I hope you guys are in for a big one. We'll kick us off with the dominant forward of the Supercoach competition, Lance Buddy Franklin, potentially moving into the midfield, but more likely staying in the forward line and just playing in the midfield when he's having a quiet game. How do you see his prospects? He's priced very expensively at $600,000, but I see most teams have him locked away. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, he's been locked for me all preseason. I know some people have flirted with taking him out because the Hawks do have a fairly tough start to the year. I think they've got Collingwood, Geelong the first 2 weeks, and then Adelaide, who look to be improving a little bit, and then West Coast. So that really is a tough start for Buddy, and he might only sort of average 95 through that period. So there is some possibility that you could pick him up a little bit cheaper 6 or 7 weeks into the season, but it's going to be hard finding the money for that. And Buddy doesn't get as many low scores as he used to, since he's going to get that extra midfield time. He's also one of my favourite players in the AFL. I don't know whether you saw him on the weekend, but that goal that he kicked from the pocket, or two of the goals he kicks from the pocket, were just unbelievable. And I'm a massive Buddy fan, so all the way in my team.
I've got a very interesting question for you. What do you see as Buddy's ceiling?
Good one. You wouldn't think that he'd average more than 120, especially with the way teams set up these days and double and triple teaming. He'd have to improve his contested marking significantly, I think, but it's not beyond reason that he'd average, 115 over a season, especially in a Hawks premiership team. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, if they end up top two, as we'd expect, big, 125 even as a ceiling, not as a likely to hit, but as a ceiling, Franklin could even hit that. I mean, if his lows are now about 90s, which is about right for him at the moment, and his highs, if he can get... I remember in his 100-goal season, when he was playing against weak defensive lines, we'd put him as captain, and he'd score 160, and we'd be able to comfortably call that from week to week. So if he can return to that type of prolific scoring where his upper end touches that 160, then there's no reason he can't even hit that 125. But that's all speculative talk, but I think we're both firming as Franklin being a pretty locked-in pick, which brings us to another player who might be a lock in future seasons to come, but this year's a bit of a maybe because of his limited preseason, and that's Nathan Fyfe. So I think his shoulder surgery set him back, and he came out in an interview saying that he's not as fit as he was this time last season, but he's still playing very well in the NAB Cup games, and he reckons he'll be cherry ripe for round one. How do you feel about Fyfe?
Wow, he's really dominated in the NAB so far, and for those that had their doubts about him, he's just sort of stuck it to them again. He's very highly priced, and Fremantle also have a really tough start to the year in those first 5 or so weeks and a really good run home in the second half of the year. I have doubted Fyfe a couple of times in his first season because he just looked like a skinny little kid that was just never going to be able to last at AFL level. Last year because of his shoulder, and he just keeps dominating. Absolutely love Nathan Fyfe and think he's not going to be a complete fail. There's a chance that he's a bit overpriced at the moment and he might set off a bit slowly and you might get him a bit cheaper later on, but you'd think he'd average at least 105 over the course of the season. The one thing that hasn't happened so far is he hasn't been tagged. I kept waiting for it last year, but they had Pav in the middle every week. Taggers went to Hill, Mundy, and he hasn't been tagged yet, so he hasn't faced that massive challenge. So that would probably be my real main doubt on him if there was to be one. What do you think of that?
That tag, like you said, is the biggest concern. So with a limited preseason, considering his high price tag and the fact that he might get tagged, you got to say that he's probably one that you'd stick away from unless you particularly are a big fan of Fyfe.
Everybody is.
Yeah. I see him as a star in the making, so I see him overcoming that. I see the physical attributes to his game, like his overhead marking and his ability to spread from the contest, that I just see him as somebody who's probably able to overcome that. So I've got him penned in at the moment, but there's still about 2.5 more weeks between now and final lockout, so a lot can change, which brings us to another Fremantle premium. Matthew Pavlich, I gotta admit, I'd probably be one of the biggest anti-Pavlich campaigners at this stage of preseason. A lot of people are quite hot on Pav, and I'm not even considering him, to be honest. He's moving to the forward line. From 2005 to 2008, his averages were 111, 108, 115, 110. That was playing in the forward line. 2009, he started pinch hitting a bit in the midfield. He scored 100 then. 2010, a bit of the same, a bit more even, 99. Full move to the midfield and went up to 106, which is his best average for those previous 3 years. Now, moving back into the forward line, it's a completely different ball game this year. There's a forward press, which there wasn't in 2008. I don't really like his selection because if you think about it, 2011, full midfield time, best season in 3 years. Moving back to the forward line, now there's a forward press. I don't really see that same leading centre half forward, Matthew Pavlich, scoring 110 points because that was his game style. He wasn't a contested mark like Travis Cloke was. He was a dead eye from 50 and he was a leading centre half forward.
You could be right here, Marcus, but he also has a pretty high ceiling and he's not all that different a player to Buddy, really, in the way that he plays. And I'm a much bigger rap than you are, obviously. I think Fremantle should be definitely improving. I think that they're probably a top six team this year. I think he's a really good forward player. He'll score plenty of goals this year. He could easily kick 70 this year and could easily average 110 in doing so.
So my real question is then, he's the fifth most expensive forward at the moment. His price to average 106, which, like I said, is the best in 3 years. And there's that risk that he's not going to score as well. Are there really that few premium options where you'd be like, Matthew Pavlich is somebody that I must get on considering he might be full priced? I mean, do you see his average going up?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I see him averaging probably 5 more than he is now. And he's probably only got a couple of seasons left at the very top of his game. So I know the last couple of years where he has picked up injury or just been worn out going into the second half of seasons and slowed down a little bit. So not a bad pick as a starter, I think.
So I'm gathering that if you think he's going to move up to another 5 points to maybe 110, 111, that he's a lock for you.
Not a lock, just someone that I quite like and I'm considering. I'm a bit reluctant to take both him and Fife, and Fife is making a very strong case in the preseason to be taken. So I'll probably only take one of them.
Well, seeing as you brought Fife up, that's that all-important Fife Pav. So you're still tossing up, or Fife is a slight preference at the moment?
Fife is a slight preference at the moment, but I think they're both really good picks.
Sure. All right. Well, I think it's clear that I'm big into Fife over Pav, but I could very well be wrong with Pavlich. There's no reason he can't have a good season, but I just think there's too much risk for his price, and I don't like paying full price for any players, let alone ones that might drop. Having said that, don't let that deter you because he could be a good selection. Similar to Adam Goods, really, in how I feel.
Okay, so what do you think about Goodsy?
Typically a slow starter. And I know you mentioned a few podcasts ago that maybe last year he had a better start. But when you look back at the numbers, that really, again, he came home a lot stronger than he started. And could that be because he starts off playing more forward time and then he got released a bit more into the midfield? Was that by circumstance because the team required him to play different roles at different part of the year? Or is it maybe that they play Goods in the forward line and then in the run home to the final series, they push him to the midfield where he can really flourish?
A couple of things he has on his sides is durability. He's missed 3 games in like a billion years. And he's also got a really good start to the season, GWS in round one. The first half of the year is really good as far as SOS goes for Goodsy. But I think that what they do is last year they did start him a bit more forward and then moved him to the midfield. And they might do that again this year just because I think that they get him ready for finals. And he sees the season as a really long progression rather than just a few games at the start to try and dominate. So I was at the game on Friday night where Essendon played Sydney. In the first quarter, Goods was really dominant. After that, he was in almost every centre bounce and he just really didn't get much football at all. When he did, he was quick, he was evasive, he looked a class above the other players on the ground, but he really wasn't racking up the stats, even though he was around the football quite a lot. So that was enough for me just to have a bit of concern. At his price and given his slow starts to the year, he's not in my team at the moment, but I can understand why a lot of people are picking him.
Assess him in pretty much the exact same way. Now on to a Geelong player, Paul Chapman, 548,000. He's said a couple of times to the media it's the best preseason he's had in quite a while, and he's keen to repay the premiership that he felt he was carried to. So I think we know Chapman's capable of a 120 average. We've seen him do that in the past. Price average only 101. He does seem like quite good value, although I think, Mark, you had a problem with his first game back.
I did have a problem. What was the go with that? 8 possessions. He was playing like wide on Nathan Foley at Skilled Stadium. Like, even in his poor games, he would always get more than 8 possessions. I don't think he was subbed. I think he was on most of the game and still only got 8 touches. I just don't understand what happened there. Is it just a NAB Cup training drill? Should I be concerned, or what do you think?
Well, can I just point you to Chris Judd, who also played his first game on the weekend, and he was scratchy too. So, and Geelong got pumped. So
I think Judd has more poor games than Chapman does, though. Chapman always has that base minimum where he'll get the 80s SC points because he just gets so much of the ball, whereas Judd maybe has a few more poor games in him.
Okay, but do you really think that Paul Chapman, if he was giving it his all, would get 8 possessions?
No, that's why I want to know what's happened. He said he's got a great preseason and he gets 8 touches against the Tigers.
Well, I mean, they got pumped and he was like, we're getting pumped in an AB Cup game. I'm not going to lift.
Great attitude to have from one of your stuff.
Well, I mean, I can't really put it down to Paul Chapman. You just got dominated in a NAB Cup game by Richmond. Like, he tried his hardest and he managed 8 touches off a great preseason. I see that as very unlikely. So I'm taking the other tack.
I think you're probably right, and I'm probably reading a little bit too much into one preseason game. And you'd be very surprised if he averaged less than 100. In the last 2 years, he sort of has gotten over the durability issues a little bit, playing 20 and 21 games. There's almost a guarantee that he will get rested at least once over the course of the season,
probably,
you would think.
Probably more than that, in fact, wouldn't you say?
You think twice. Yeah. So can you pick a player if you know he's going to miss 2 games?
I think you pick Paul Chapman if you think he's going to average 110 plus. I think he can average 110 to 120, so that's a yes from me.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you only think that Paul Chapman can average 105, then no, I don't think you should pick him. I'm pretty confident that he's going to miss more than a game. I know our resting policy. I also know that we're probably not going to be that serious about contending for the premiership this year. We're going to focus more efforts into bleeding our youngsters so that we can have a tilt before the likes of Jimmy Bartel retire.
Jeez,
so,
that sounds like a lot of reasons not to pick him.
Well, I'm just saying that he's probably going to miss more than one game. It doesn't mean he's going to play terribly, I don't think, at all. But if you think he's only going to average 105 and he's missing 2 games, then obviously that's a pretty poor selection. But if you think he's averaging 110 to 120 and he's missing 2 games, but he's priced at 10 below what you expect him to average, then he's still a really good pick. So, I mean,
I'm not totally sold on that with the only having 2 on our bench this year. What if he misses 2 in a row around the byes? Or
I remember that. Sorry to cut in, but Paul Chapman 2 years ago, or maybe 3 years ago, I can't remember, but he averaged 125 or something. So he still missed games, but he was so important that anyone without Paul Chapman was ruled out of the 50K that year.
Even it'd be interesting. Games. Maybe one thing you could do would pick him up at the start and then sideways him around the byes or something like that if you know he's going to miss games in the second half of the year and take his extra points at the start.
It's actually a really interesting tactic that I hadn't considered, because for viewers that don't know, if you want to avoid the donuts from the bye this season, you're pretty much going to be forced to trade to side swap around them. So it's a very interesting point you bring up. We'll move on to Dustin Martin now, who is a red-hot favourite and will probably be in all teams after his impressive game against Geelong.
He wasn't in my team 3 or 4 weeks ago. I've got to say that Richmond have a really, really tough start to the year, and then it does open up a little bit. I was thinking, I'm just going to wait on mine. I'm going to get him about the same price as other people I want to pick. But, he's been impressive the last couple of weeks.
Just a quick side note, just something I thought interesting to bring up, is that looking at especially early SOS, I mean, you're talking the first 5 rounds, it can be really deceiving to look at SOS based on last year's results, because teams like Richmond are going to play a lot better relative to the competition than they will probably at the end of the season, because they've started off with a strong preseason, whereas teams that come back a month later to preseason because they played in finals might have a slower start. So even though he has a tougher early draw, is that tougher because he's playing the likes of Collingwood and Carlton, who have arguably had a much slower NAB Cup? I mean, form doesn't just get turned on like that. I mean, we saw Essendon last year come out of the gates, and they might have been considered easy games if you were looking at SOS, but they did kill it, and they were tough opponents at the start, so...
I think this is a Geelong supporter that just got pumped by Richmond on the weekend, trying to justify what happened and saying Richmond are red hot.
Don't you think that's a fair point about...
No, it probably is a fair point, but there's probably a bit of that in it as well. After seeing him on the weekend, I mean, he kicked 3 goals in the first quarter. I think he's going to be... It'd be very, very difficult to leave out.
That's a point for him, really.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think most sides will have Martin, and it's going to be quite exciting to watch him this year.
Yeah, well, he's locked into my side, so can't wait to see him break games apart, which you just always love picking those players that are game breakers. So.
I really like Richmond. I'm a really huge fan of Cochin, and I like Jack Riewoldt, and Martin looks fantastic. There's a lot to like about the young Richmond side.
Yeah, well, I thought there was an interesting point on the weekend that somebody said that Martin will cop the tag now and Cochin might get off the reins a bit, which, I mean, it does seem possible considering Martin's flashiness and the fact that he's younger and maybe not as ready to deal with the tag. But how do you see the tag going down? Do you see as Cochin still having to take that, or will Martin get it this year?
I think it'll probably switch between the two, a bit like it does sort of between Judd and Murphy sometimes. I think last year Cochin really showed that he was quite susceptible to the tag and made a fair big impact on his scoring and ability to win the ball. I don't think you can shut both of them down, so there might be a bit up and down between them, but yeah, I think they'll both get the tags depending on who's hot at the time.
Sure.
And that leaves Delidio as well. So if he does move into the midfield, that's going to be really tough to shut that down against Richmond.
Mm. On to another game breaker. Previously, we've hated him, but Kendall, Travis the Kendall Cloak, 530,000, price to average 98. Had a big season last season and I'd say set to improve again this season. Playing at Collingwood, where he'll obviously get a lot and quality forward entry to give him the best chance against his defender. How do you see his prospects? I know a lot of people aren't quite as hot on him, considering there really isn't too much downside to this selection.
Not too much downside. You'd have to watch him and like barrack for him every week. That's a massive downside, if you ask me. No way in hell. What's he averaging? 97 last year. You'd think that he'd improve. He was the best contested mark in the AFL last year. I thought there was some chance this was going to be the year that I would have to pick him, but he probably hasn't done enough to make him like a definite pick. And I think you're probably better off picking the midfield type forwards just because they're less likely to have down games, whereas Cloak might get shut down for a 50 here or there, which could make him really cheap at some stage.
But he averaged 98.
Yeah, but if he gets a 50 at some stage, you might pick him up cheap in the middle of the year or something like that. I think whereas where a Buddy or a Pav, they're probably going to get moved into the midfield, which will just bump up their score a little bit, and that probably won't have such a low floor on them.
Oh, sorry, I was confused. I thought you meant pick up a mid-pricer like Dangerfield or Sidebottom.
No, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Like
sure,
a mid-forward sort of player.
Oh, I see. Yep, sure.
Yep. Why have I spoken for 5 minutes about Travis Cloak? That's well, way too long.
I'm a lot less biased towards Travis Cloak. I think he's quite a good pick. Like I said, I don't actually see a downside to him, unless you're like Mark and really just hate watching him that much. There really isn't too much downside. He's just trending on the way up, and Collingwood aren't going anywhere. So as their key position forward, he should continue to do well. And by the sounds of things, he will be a point of difference, because I have not seen him around draft teams at all, really. Which brings us to Robbie Gray, who has also been very quiet in draft teams so far, but has since come into contention with a strong preseason. Remember that last year he did play 21 games, which was something that we didn't expect. If I'm not wrong, I think Mark has already had a rant about Robbie Gray so far this preseason.
Yeah, he's probably not doing another one.
But even despite that rant, he did concede that Gray seemed like a pretty good selection. So has anything changed in the last couple of weeks for you?
My main concern is that he plays for Port Adelaide. I actually expect Port Adelaide to maybe improve a little bit this year, but I probably wouldn't be looking to put too many of their premiums into my team. Not a horrible selection. I think there's better picks out there. It sucks because I've been a huge Robbie Gray fan in the past and been burned by him a couple of times. So go for it. He's exciting to watch.
I think the only reason that he's not going to be selected as much is Sidebottom and Dangerfield, who we're going to touch on in a slight bit. And there are a few others that, like Lee Adams, there's Mitch Robinson, Jordan Lewis, Zaharakis, that if we have time, we might get to. But there's just such a range of new mid-forwards that it does seem like he might be neglected by the fantasy community. But like Mark said, there's nothing wrong with that selection. He could very well average 100 and play out the season. So
I'm going to hang my hat on the next guy. Steele Sidebottom. He's been my number one pick this year, all preseason. Had him in my team. People keep throwing doubts at me, trying to get him out of my team. I think he will spend a lot more time in the midfield this year. He got to average of nearly 21 possessions last year. I think he can easily increase that to about 25. It's going to be tough to steal some points from someone else in Collingwood midfield, but I think he could quite easily average 100 this year. I really like the way he goes about his footy. He's a big game player. He's a goal-kicking midfielder. Played a great game on the weekend against Adelaide, one of the very few Collingwood players that actually did anything. I'm a big rap for Steele.
Well, he was in my very first preseason draft team of 2012, but he's since been in and out. He had a very strong game, as Mark said, against Adelaide, which is what's really seeing him storm into contention in recent weeks in a lot of draft teams. So I don't know. I've cooled a bit just because a lot of people have gotten on him, and I was like, I like that he was my unique mid-price player, but I'll probably get on him. If you consider, you know, if we had Steele side bottom in this exact same, you know, as he is now, but just available like a couple of years ago where the options were a lot thinner, side bottom in his current state as a mid forward, you'd be like, hell yes, at 450,000. I'm getting a midfielder on the improve in the forward line. But this year, there are just so many options that people are umming and ahhing a bit more. But I agree with Mark, he's a good selection. But again, might be overlooked for somebody else like Patrick Dangerfield, who I'm a big rap for. 435,000, averaged 80 last season, and is primed for a big one. He's in his fifth season, a year older than Steele Sidebottom, being in the system for that extra year.
He did stay at home in Geelong for most of that first year, though.
He did. But comparing preseasons, not to say Steele hasn't had a good one, but Dangerfield has had an absolute ripper. A couple of weeks ago, captained the side and did really well. And last week, again, backed that effort up. And this is his first year that he's making that permanent move to the midfield, available in the forward.
Same with Sidebottom as well, I think. It's kind of tough because we're both like big raps on these two guys, but there are 450,000. Neither of them has ever averaged 90 before. And if they're not averaging 90, then they're going to turn out to be pretty poor picks. So while I think we both like to find a player like this that we think is going to have a massive improvement, and there's some really great reasons for it, like a role change and heaps of talent.
Strong SOS for Dangerfield.
Yeah, just be a little bit cautious with picking them, though, because we're picking a lot based on potential rather than any evidence we've seen of scoring in the past.
So can I ask you then, Mark, Dangerfield or Sidebottom?
Most of the preseason, I would have answered Sidebottom pretty clearly to that. But I think that Adelaide have such a good draw that I would have to say if I was going to pick one, it'd probably be Dangerfield.
Nice.
There'll be plenty of good teams this year, I think, that don't take either of these guys, though.
And can you have both?
I think that there's probably a bunch of teams that are going to take both as well. But, gee, that's a lot of gamble. You'd be gambling a lot on that because you'd be picking two people that cost a lot of money and neither of them's actually had a really strong season before. Yeah, if you're a gambler, maybe pick both of them.
Well, I'm a gambling kind of guy, Mark. I do like the look of both of them. I am considering both of them for my team, but Dangerfield's ahead of Sidebottom for me at the moment because of SOS mainly.
You just stole my reason.
It's a very good reason, to be fair.
Okay.
All right, on to the last player that we're definitely going to talk about, and we'll see how much time we have left, and we might do a few more. Jason Porplesia really came into contention after his last game. He had a four-goal effort, and to be honest, Mark, I'm very, very upset with his game on the weekend because... And
you have a massive man crush on
Yeah, I do. Porplesia. I selected him in 08 and 09, and he's an absolute jet. I've paid 400,000+ for him. He used to be my favorite player in the AFL. Hands that just stick onto everything. He's a dead
and
eye.
Shoulders that just fall apart at the drop of a hat.
Why do you do this to me? Why do you hurt me like this? He's a dead eye in front of goals, tackles. Paul Ruse said on the couch this week that Adelaide has always been a bogey team for Sydney, and one of their biggest reasons was Jason Porplesia. They used to put their best defender on him, and that says a lot. He is an absolute
jet. So should we disregard NAB form then because he's going to be locked down during the regular season?
What do you mean by that?
Because like they're not going to put anyone on him in the NAB, but then just shut him down.
No. I mean, he averaged 87. Pretty sure that's his highest season average so far. And that was when he was playing well. So I think he's proven that he can still score despite that. I remember they were always talking, oh, is he going to move into the midfield and get more touches that way? But he's a player that they absolutely must have in their forward line just based on their structure. So I think you're going to see him play some consistent game time in the forward line and perfect his role there this year. And I think he's an absolute steal at 230,000. I just wish he hadn't played so that I could be the only one who picked him because I was always going to select this bloke.
I picked Chris Knights last year. Same price. Same sort of scoring history, same sort of preseason, and it didn't work out. Why is Porpoise any different?
Because they're completely different players. Chris Knight's disposal efficiency, gross. Jason Porplesia, disposal efficiency, brilliant. Marking, brilliant. In front of goals, brilliant. He's a better player than Chris Knight. That's as simple as that.
If he averages 80 to 85, which is about his best, are you going to be happy with that?
Yes.
Okay.
At 229,000, especially considering the forward rookies are weak this year, abs are freaking lootly.
Okay. So the next player that we're going to look at is Cyril Rioli. Now, I have picked him in the past and been probably burned a little bit just because he is so injury prone. But geez, he's exciting to watch, has a huge scoring ceiling. One day, you wouldn't be surprised if he averaged 120. The highest average in the past is 99, priced relatively cheaply at about 550. What do you think?
Well, like you said, injury history has got to be the thing that you're looking at because I think nobody doubts his talent. I think Rioli admitted himself that he's going to spend more time in the forward line and not try and transition into the midfield as fast as they were trying to do last year. And that's probably good news for his hamstrings because he's not going to have to run them to death like he had to last season.
And a new running style as well, which there's been a lot of discussion about. And he also said when he changed his running style that when he was really flat out and really going for it, he sort of reverted back to natural instinct and was stretching out a little bit. So I think that you'd really want to see it in evidence before you picked him.
With most people locking Franklin in, Rioli's probably not too much of a viable pick either.
He's the sort of player that if you pick him and he goes off, he could win you the competition.
That's a pretty strong endorsement, Mark.
I'm not saying the pick him, but he's just like, he's that sort of gamble. Like he could increase his average by 20 points. He could have some really big games in a really short amount of time.
Next player that we're going to look at is Nicky Riewoldt, averaged 87, was in a lot of initial draft teams, but has faded out the last few weeks with probably NAB Cup performances that left a bit to be desired. He's still going to have to overcome that forward press problem, and I don't really see that changing too much. Plus, he's got that knee injury that he himself admitted in an interview this preseason that he's going to need management for because it's going to start hurting him at some stage of the season. So I'm not sure how much confidence you can take out of that. Plus, I think some people are still saying he never fully recovered from that full hamstring tear either. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think if St Kilda were going to make top four still and they were going to be a grand final side, then Riewoldt at his current price would be a must-have. Would you agree with that?
See, I'm still even shaky on that. I'm probably overly negative about this selection. So when you put it that way and considering his previous year's average, if you take out the fact that he might have to be rested, then yes, I guess based on those stats, it's kind of compelling and be hard to say no to, but
if you do expect St Kilda to drop off a little bit, which a lot of us do, he's probably going to struggle for a similar share of points in that forward line. It's only just over 12 months ago that he was considered in the top three or four players in the AFL and considered the most important player to any one team. But maybe just injury is getting to him. He's got a couple of chronic sort of injuries. And yeah, I think he's going to struggle to get to his former glory. I think he's probably still underpriced, though, and he should average close to 100 for the year.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's still a pretty good endorsement. Well, I probably don't see it quite the same way. I even think he could potentially slide, so I'm definitely going to keep off. And I think a lot of people are tipping St Kilda to drop out of the eight. If they do drop out of the eight, I do find it hard to see Nick Riewoldt average more than he did last year. So.
Okay, so a player that a lot of people were talking about early in the preseason as one of the pure mid-priced forwards is Alan Christensen from Geelong. I think this is his third proper season. His average is affected because he did get the sub vest a lot last year. He's coming priced at 65, probably would have averaged a bit more than that if he hadn't been subbed so often. As a Geelong fan, what do you think?
I was quite hot on him at the start of the preseason, if I'm going to be honest, but I've since cooled just because he hasn't really been playing. I'm not exactly sure why, but it must be a player management type thing. He played his first game and wasn't too impressive in his first one. I'm hoping he shows a bit more in the second, but when you step back and look at it, you are asking a lot from a player who's entering his third season, but really second season of actually getting on the park. I know he is significantly underpriced because of the sub vest. I think he averaged, if you took out the sub affected games, once he started hitting some four, I think it was like even 95. That was how well he was going, which is why a lot of people are looking at him. And he is that mid forward MPP. But really, again, you do want to see some, especially with these mid-price selections, you want to see a strong preseason. So if he doesn't show anything next week, then completely ruled out in my eyes. But if he has a strong showing next week, I would look closely at him because he does have quite a bit of value in him. How do you feel about that, Mark? If you're picking a mid-price player, do you need them to have a hot preseason?
I think if you're looking at a young breakout improver, then yes, you do. Absolutely, you do. If you're looking at someone sort of returning from injury, then you'd really hope that they had a really strong preseason, like Brian Lake sort of isn't the example that I'd be thinking about. But maybe because of his really strong record, then maybe you could provide an exception there. But if you're looking at a breakout candidate, they absolutely have to have a really, really strong preseason to get in your face about it, I think.
So I guess he's ruled out for you then.
Yes, he is for me. And I've never really been a fan of the pick just because I don't think that he's going to become a premium this year. And I think at his price, you'd really be looking for someone not to just increase in value and get you some early points like you might with a Paul Pleasure, but someone that you're going to keep in your team to the end of the year.
I think that wraps up this week's show. Just to remind you all again, next week is the last preseason show before the first lockout, which is GWS v Sydney. That's partial lockout. We will be looking at the Rucks and also looking at rookies from GWS and Sydney. So that'll be a pretty big show. And I think we're going to try and fit in some buy talk then as well. And then in our last week, we're going to do mid-priced and premium midfielders, as well as the remaining rookies. And that covers our last two preseason shows. Don't forget to head over to facebook.com/yoursupercoachcoach or follow us on Twitter. Our hashtags are your_sc_coach and Mark's is FBDonkey. So follow us on those two social media platforms.
See ya.
Thanks very much for the show, guys. See you. Yeah.